This summer, you may have found what not a few of us have found, probably by about, well, May or June, that whereas often we like to go to whatever our favorite news source is and you know, just find out what's happening around the world today, that you were cringing before you even opened up the page. Because it seemed like just an extraordinary run of violence of things at home in the United States, in other countries, in the Middle East, of course. And this I don't know how else to put it other than sort of by feeling, this felt early on like a summer where God had maybe pulled his restraining hand one increment away from all the things that could happen that sometimes the evil he restrains. And so when our congregation just outside Beaver Falls was hit by some very sad things this summer, one of my early thoughts through it all was what a tragically fitting year and fitting summer for these sad things to happen. But in the middle of that, or in the wake of that, since I'd finished, I'd been doing about a year-long series in Romans. I'll intersperse what is usually an exegetical series with some topical requests for people. And someone asked, I think probably thinking about the way the summer had gone, could you do a sermon on what do we mean by God's blessing? And what's going on when you place a blessing on someone else? And that's a topic that I think we think about a lot, because so many of us are often in the place of doing it in front of others. May the Lord bless you. We think about that a lot. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that. I'm going to read the text in a minute, but I'd like to preface it with a short story. I had the pleasure of hearing the short story a few years ago firsthand by the man involved. Gabriel Barkai spoke on campus at Geneva a couple of years ago, and we at the college have often spent a day with him at the Temple Mount Sifting Project, which you might know about in Jerusalem. There's a whole story with that I won't go into. Seasoned archaeologist, but back in 1980, before he was basically a household name, at least in the Middle East, a household name, and for some year, working on a very meager budget and relying, as archaeological digs typically do, he needed volunteers but couldn't even find a good set of adult volunteers, so he talked a local club or school group into sending 12 and 13-year-old volunteers to help at least do the digging and the dirt moving and all the messy stuff that goes with archaeology. And they were focusing on a place called Kateph Hinnom, just outside Jerusalem. A particular church is located there today. They were working around the side of it. They knew there were some ancient ruins there. They eventually dug down, found a patristic era, medieval era church. That was good, but he was looking for even older stuff. And they got down to some Jewish tombs, roughly thousands of years old, and they knew they were nearing some really interesting stuff. But not sure what they were going to get. Gabby Barkai was sort of splitting the difference between his constant calculations of how do you do stuff and management of a 13-year-old boy named Nathan, who, when Gabby Barkai tells the story, he just has the faces I can't imitate to tell how annoying he found this boy. Too much energy, too many questions, too interruptive, and determined to make progress and also keep the boy as far away from himself as he could, he gave him a pickaxe and a hammer and told him to go over and clear out a kind of a cave room that they were getting down into. And Barkai figures at least that'll keep him occupied, and he gives him a specific direction. I want the place so cleaned out, if you need to, I want you to lick the whole thing clean. That was the direction. Well, Nathan did a very good job, had it totally cleared out. Barkai was surprised how such an obstreperous child could do such a good job. But you know that statement about if you give a boy a hammer, the world becomes a nail? And after he totally cleared the place out, he didn't stop there, but he decided he would take his hammer and just go at the floor of the place just to see if there was anything underneath it, which normally would be the last thing you'd want to do, except without any of them yet realizing it, the place was in such disreputable condition, the former roof of this kind of cave room had actually collapsed who knows how many centuries or even thousands of years ago, and what they thought was the floor of the room, in fact, was the former ceiling of the room. And so as that boy, Nathan, went at the floor with his hammer and tore the thing to pieces, he opened up a secret access to a hidden room with thousands of ancient objects in it, 125 silver objects, 40 iron arrowheads, gold, ivory, glass, bone implements, 150 semi-precious stones, and in the middle of it, two little things that looked like dirty cigarette butts, about the size of a cigarette butt and looking like it had rolled around the dirt, which in a way it had. And they would have just discarded it as garbage, except it had a funny little colored shimmer to it. And they realized it was silver, and they realized it had been scrolled. And not sure what to do next, they sent the two, there were two of them, to Germany and had German scientists try to unscroll them. It was beyond the expertise even of expert German scientists. That says something when a German scientist can't solve it. They send it back to Israel. The Israeli scientists go at it, and what they proceed to do is unscroll a little silver scroll in a very, very thin beaten silver. Almost like tin foil to us. And inscribed in proto-Hebraic letters are what, and I consulted with CJ, and we both think this is true, that this is still the oldest extant writing, original writing of any part, still exists today, of any part of the Old Testament, dating to somewhere around the time of Jeremiah. And in that early Hebrew are these words, "The Lord bless you and keep you." You all recognize it. What Moses told Aaron to say to the sons of Israel, "The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift his countenance upon you and give you peace." And though not on the scroll, Moses explains to Aaron, "And thus invoke the name of upon the sons of Israel, the name of God himself." So I just want to think a little bit about blessing this morning with you, but I do want to ask a question that you will have to sort out within yourself, namely, how badly do you want God's blessing? Because I don't want to assume it's something that's always priority for religious people. How desperate are you, whatever it looks like, to get it? Are you as desperate, for example, as the Queen of Sheba, who travels out of her homeland somewhere in Northeast Africa, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Yemen, somewhere in that vicinity, and travel north to a foreign country to a wise man saying, "I want your whatever you've got, I want your wisdom, I want to be blessed by it"? Are you as willing to take a risk as somebody like Naaman the Syrian, who has heard from a slave girl, "There's things to be had from the God of your enemy"? Are you willing to take a risk like that? Do you fit within the group of people Paul references in Acts 17, speaking at the Areopagus, when he talks about people who will grope for God? They're that determined. They want something of God. Are you as determined as the people Jesus alluded to when he used that strange phrase, something translated like, "Violent men are rushing and taking the kingdom of heaven"? These are people who want a blessing. These are examples of people who really, really wanted it. One writer, Michael Brown, said, "Look, nothing's more important than securing the blessing of God in one's life." Is that important to you? So let's talk a couple minutes. Blessing, God's benefits, God's kindness, God's care, God's resources of all kinds. There's a phrase in Romans 10 that God is abounding in riches for everyone who calls on him. You need to ask, but in a sense, there's a pleasure of God in giving away all that he has. You know, sometimes we have something that's so wonderful, we want to hold on to it. We actually don't want to give it away. And then sometimes you land on something that's so wonderful, you're just excited to share it. I'd love to give you some great spiritual example, but my most recent exercise in this was coming back with a hoard of East African coffee and chocolate. And I did share the blessing. I've been sharing it around to a lot of people. Not a very spiritual act, but at least in my own limited way, it's this pleasure of having people enjoy what I enjoy. And God, on a massive scale, if I could put it humanly, has that delight in sharing. Do you realize the first recorded act of God towards the creation that he's brought into existence, the order that he's created, the first recorded act in his relationship to that, Genesis 1:28, he blesses it. Blessing is the first recorded act of God toward everything and everyone that he made. And specific to that blessing are two things that are mentioned there. One of them is fruitfulness. It's a mandate to develop, to grow and reproduce, and all that that means, both of people as well as of the things that you handle. And the other is to have a qualified dominion, a responsibility to handle things and handle them well. I don't know if you think about those dimensions of blessing, but at least that's what comes out in the first recorded blessing of history. So whether you go to Abraham, who on the one hand goes to Melchizedek and receives a blessing, turns around, goes to God and receives a blessing, you want to go to Jacob and the interesting story of Jacob, who he's determined to have the blessing of God, but much of it is actually more property-oriented than anything else, although there's more than that. Or you come down to Aaron's blessing, which is a more, if you will, overtly spiritual thing, what we get is this idea we are the lesser individuals going to someone who has far more than any of us has and who loves to bring all those good things our way and say, if you will, please bring it on. Bring it on. I'm welcoming it. That means his preference and his benefits are being given often to those who are outside, according to Jesus in Matthew 5. God's reign falls on the just and the unjust alike. But the preference is towards the people in covenant with him, or as we might put it today, those who are part of one's family. So many of us have children. If you don't, you still get the picture. Who do you take care of primarily? You may have a role in other children's lives, but your preference is to your own. Your first efforts, your primary efforts, majority efforts are to your own, as are God's, whether he's giving us temporal benefits, whether he is growing our souls eternally. And often those things seem to be sistered and intertwined together. His preference is to those who are in his family. And it is interesting, I'll simply mention this without delaying it and belaboring it, but as I was thinking about our blessings at our church this summer, I was reminded of John Calvin commenting that often God gives us blessing with what he calls an admixture of pain. It's an interesting thing. Something we would say, I welcome this, sistered to something we don't welcome. Why would you put those two things together? Could you put those two things together and still be, you know, still have integrity in the goodness? Well, God certainly can, and Calvin comments, so that we don't fix our hearts on the present world. So that the blessings will often involve physical, temporal things related to the present world. We want to be able to enjoy them, not only because we can enjoy them for their own sake, but because they are a taste of a much bigger relationship of an eternal, magnificent, unparalleled God. I like to call blessings, therefore, Janus events. You know, that's Janus, J-A-N-U-S. You know, the mythical Greek character often depicted in various motifs, including, by the way, a lot of ancient Greek coins had Janus, the two-faced character looking this way and this way simultaneously. Personally, I think it would get very confusing doing that, but that's the character. I think blessing is a kind of a Janus event. On the one hand, it looks towards God and it asks for his help and mercy and generosity. And when we invoke it, we're saying, please, we need this. You're great and we need it because we're so small. But then, as you know very well, sometimes we turn around and we say to somebody else, blessings on you, as you know, as you do whatever it is that you're doing. They also look to people. They look upward to God. They look horizontally to others. We are sometimes able to say, I have confidence that God is assuring me, I can assure you, he is on your side. He is with you. He is around you. He is blessing you. He's giving all the things you need to have. That's why we call him the blessed God. He doesn't simply give goodness. He embodies it. He is goodness. And he gives away from what is inside of him. So nothing more important in life than securing the blessing of God. It's not just getting the goods, though that's a pleasant thing. I'm reminded of our oldest son at about the age of 13 making his first trip to Israel with us, and he basically stayed by my side throughout the trip. We were traveling with about 40 or 50 people while his sister disappeared from sight and hung out with everybody else in the group for the next week. And I said to my son, Nathan, I said, Nathan, if you want to go and make friends and hang out with those people, that's okay. He says with a smirk, no, Dad, you're the one that's got the money. And I was actually okay. I didn't mind that. he was right. God's the one with the resources. Stick with him, but not only for the resources, but because they express God himself, as your generosity to others expresses the goods, the chocolate and the coffee, but also you yourself are invested in the things that you give away. Jesus blessed children. What a great, great opportunity. Jesus blessed his disciples. Interestingly, Jesus blessed food, different nuance, setting it apart to a good usage. And I'll remind you, as you think about what sacraments we do, among the sacraments that we do, he blessed the Lord's Supper. He blesses the food at the Lord's Supper and solemnizes it and distinguishes it from common things. And Jesus also, and the Bible also, says there are certain designated agents of blessing. And those who are encouraged positively, I'm not saying this is the final list, but priests clearly, and those ministering in the Old Testament, priests clearly, the apostles and ministers of the gospel, clearly, New Testament, those who shepherd others, and covenant heads of their own type, and parents of those who are under their care. These are definitely examples. And when we bless, one thing I will close with, we are also saying we have a new standard. We who have been brought to Christ are living by a new standard where, according to 1 Peter 3:9, which talks to people who are often under persecution and pressure in that letter there, he says, and even when there are situations of evil, persecution, we don't return evil for evil or insult for insult, but we give a blessing instead. Why? Because he goes on to say, because you were called for this very purpose, so that you might inherit a blessing. Isn't that interesting? We can start to treat people in ways, good ways, they don't deserve, because we have been treated in good ways we didn't deserve either. And that's the beauty of blessing. Two psalms we're singing this morning are both expressing aspects of that. Blessing God is just a recognizing all that he has, all that he is, and all that we need. And let's bring this together. I'm going to pray first, and let's bring this together singing from 65A, which will also do that. Father, thank you for doing this towards us. because we all agree we didn't warrant it. And your patience along the way, we didn't earn that either. And our ability to show some of this to people who otherwise didn't deserve it is simply because that's the way, it's a wonderful way we've been treated as well. May we appreciate, in the temporal world, the good things we have and just enjoy them. Many people have much, and there are many people who have very little of it. I'd like to enjoy what's given. May we also have the pleasure of being light, hope, peace, and the kind hands of God as shown to us. May we be representatives of those to the people you bring into our lives. We pray it in the name of Jesus.